Reese's peanut butter cups are the greatest, but let me play devil's advocate here. Let's see. So, no, that's a good thing. that's definitely not a problem. Reese's, you did it. You stumped this charming devil.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of On the Corner, the official podcast of PitcherList.com. I'm your host, Eric Samulski, joined by the man himself, Nick Pollock. Nick, we're going to talk about starting pitchers we love today, which isn't much different than every day.
I know, right? What is happening?
Yeah, we're going to focus on some names that you probably have heard us talk about before. There are some that we've saved for the end, I think, to make it so like, look, like we want to establish that we are in on these specific ones. But then there's like this massive group of flyers that we're getting more interested in. And there will be someone along the way that I'm like, oh, I kind of like this guy a little bit more right now. So a little bit different than Monday because we've already had more information. Now there's always things to talk about.
There's already
more. And we're going to make this one faster pace. You got an hour and 20, 50 minutes last time, something like that. It's going to be under an hour. So we're going to start with Eric Samulski.
Ooh.
Eric. Who is the first one that you find? We're going to do five guys each. Who's yours?
Yeah, we're doing five with an asterisk because Nick and I are going to mention some guys that we're not going to do full analysis on. So the first guy that I'm mentioning, I'm getting a lot of Bobby Miller in drafts when I wait on starting pitching and not attacking an ace early. So I just wanted to put it out there. We've talked about him a bunch, but I love Bobby Miller this year. If I'm in a 15-team league, I'm happy to get him as my starting pitcher one. If I'm in a 12-team and I wait and I double tap and get him, love it. I have so much Bailey Ober on so many of my teams.
Mitchell's darling.
Big fan of his. I was a fan of Ober's last year. He had been in early drafts. I'd been getting him almost as my third or fourth starting pitcher. Over the last 2 weeks in NFBC RotoWire Online Championships, he's going pick 124th now. So that's in the range of like guys like Michael King, Tanner Bibee, Hunter Green. So he's going a little higher, but I have him ranked above all of those guys. So I'm still getting Bailey Ober, even where he's currently going. I love his command. I love the fact that he's throwing even a little bit harder right now.
Oh, yeah.
I know he was throwing harder last spring training and it still went down until like mid 92 during the season. So I'm not expecting like massive velocity gains, but I think he'll hold some of it. I love that he's attacking up in the zone with it. And then I think this harder, you know, gyro slider cutter, he doesn't really care what you call it. But I think it is another really good pitch for him as something that's kind of movement profile wise in between the four seam and the slider that he has. And so I think it gives him another way to attack, in particular to attack lefties. So I'm just looking at a guy who's got a deeper arsenal with already established plus command with potentially a little bit more velocity. And again, Bailey Ober at 93, 94 with that extension is like, you know, 98 for some other pitchers. I love seeing that and I'm happy to get him pretty much everywhere right now.
Yeah, I mean, we're big fans of Bailey Ober here at PitcherList, and I have him inside my top 25 now. Because, again, when I talk about the things that I like every 5 days, you can go six innings, you have a good floor that we like, and there's upside for more. That's Bailey Ober. I mean, really, when I say, like, you have a good floor, I really mean you have command I trust, and Bailey Ober absolutely has that. So I'm a huge fan of that one, and it's annoying because I think back in like October, we were saying, oh, Bailey Ober, like 45th or so, we could get him later. And now I'm seeing like first 100 picks sometimes. I'm like, oh, this stinks. This is annoying.
Yeah. I mean, you have him 25. I have him 28. So even at his ADP, like we're still happy to take him.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who's the first guy for you?
Well, okay. So obviously Cole Reagan's fine. Done. You know that. I'm not gonna really lean on that one. I actually find that the starter that I'm being more aggressive on, I think, than others that's in that realm-ish is Joe Musgrove. And Musgrove, to me, I understand he also had two bad spring training starts. But if Musgrove's healthy, like, that's just stability. And I really feel that the floor of Musgrove is so good when it comes to quality. You know, even with Ober, like, we like Ober. It's not as long of a track record. Joe Musgrove has a kitchen sink of options. He's refining well. He's utilizing his four-seamer better than he has before because it's not a very good pitch, but cool. I'm not going to just throw them in the zone anymore. I'm going to use my cutter to do that, and then I'll use surprise sinkers effectively. And then this slider and curveball, but that both miss bats. And then there's also maybe a changeup. Like, it's a six-pitch arsenal that he uses well, has good command, good team contacts as well. I know that he threw under 100 innings last year, but we've talked endlessly about how we don't really think that is an indication of being injury prone for the year ahead. And I'm a huge fan of this. Joe Musgrove is someone that I just easily just say, yeah, cool. There's my SP2 in the eighth round with ease. And I'm a huge fan of it. And I think there's a big tier drop between really, I mean, it's like him, Framber, and Steele, Justin Steele, that are really like the last ones. I'm like, yeah, okay. I mean, Bailey Ober is also in that tier for me, but it kind of is. It's always a weird way to put like the actual tiers. I wanted to put one right at the end of Steele there, like a mini three tier. So Musgrove to me is a very safe one that I will so gladly take in all drafts.
Yeah. I have Logan Gilbert in that tier as well. I know you don't, but I agree with you that like that's kind of kidding. The end. That's the end of the tier. And I agree. And I love getting Joe Musgrove wherever I can. My next pitcher is somebody who I thought I was going to give to you because he was your darling early on in spring. And it's Shota Imanaga.
Yeah.
And I have been, this is an instance where like I've been pleasantly surprised that actually his spring has been mediocre from a stat standpoint because it hasn't allowed his ADP to climb up. Over the last 2 weeks in NFBC online championships, he's going 168th, right around Christian Javier and Jose Berrios and Justin Verlander. And I just prefer Imanaga far and away to all of those guys.
Yeah.
Couple things stand out. First of all, like if you're looking at spring training stats, first of all, don't. Second of all, like the way in which he's missing bats to me is way more important than the fact that he has an ERA over 8. Like, right. I don't particularly care about that. I like that the swing and miss stuff that we saw, you know, in the World Baseball Classic, in Japan is actually carrying over and against MLB hitters too, right? Not just against like guys that are in double A. As we've mentioned many times before, he had the best stuff plus, according to Eno Saris' stuff plus metrics, of any pitcher in the World Baseball Classic, had a better strikeout rate than Yamamoto in Japan. So we always knew there was plus stuff. Watching him, I love the fact that he's like going to sliders in a 2-0 count, right? Things like that where like, sure, I don't know how much of that will carry over to regular season games. He might be messing around in spring, but to me, it looks like a pitcher who has clear trust in his arsenal and is happy throwing things in different counts. And I love what that does to a hitter because it messes hitters up, man. Like you're expecting certain things in certain counts. And sure, like I might go, okay, 2-0 fastball, right? So he's going to throw me off and he'll throw a changeup. Because you know he knows I'm sitting fastball. I'm certainly not thinking, oh, slider, right? It's just a whole different movement profile that will just freeze guys totally. I know his last outing, he struggled with command. Listen, this is not anything he struggled with in his career in Japan, right? I mean, last year he walked 24 guys total on the season in 159 innings. Like, you know, he walked 29, he walked 32 guys total in 2022. So there might be some adjustment with the ball. The ball is obviously going to be different in the MLB than it was in Japan. But those are things that, like, I think maybe you see that get ironed out after the first couple of starts of spring of the regular season. He starts to adapt a little bit. So I'm not concerned that he hasn't had a dominant spring, and I won't be concerned if he doesn't look dominant in his first few starts. I think, like we saw with Senga last year, it might take a little time to figure out the ball and adapting the arsenal to the new league. What I'm looking at is a guy whose pitches are clearly above average to plus in terms of just their overall shape, and who is creative in how he uses those. And so, sure, he lives up in the zone with the fastball, which we love, which means he's going to give up some home runs every now and then. But I love the profile, and I'm getting him in a lot of leagues because he's still going in kind of like SP4 territory. And I absolutely love that price.
Yeah, I mean, Imanaga, I'm a huge fan of as well, obviously. It is interesting to see that the runs he allowed, a lot of them are on home runs. And even like that Patrick Wisdom hung slider, and he's hung a few amount of them. And I remember actually watching the WBC, and at first, that was my only reference point for Imanaga. And I watched, of course, the championship game against the U.S., and like the slider was the pitch that Trey Turner took out against him. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's maybe not as a consistent whatever. But I don't actually think that that's going to hang over his head too much in the season. You made the point about his walk rate in Japan. And I would even say that the way he approached his fastball was with command and not necessarily control there, where he was around the edges there. And now he's starting to actually embrace going upstairs, which is great. So I'm a huge fan of Imanaga. It will take some time. I feel like the first month isn't going to be as great. It's what we normally see from Japanese pitchers. It's a new ball. It's a new experience, really. And it takes some adjustment. But as you mentioned, the swing stuff is there. I'm not seeing as much with, sometimes a splitter is kind of there, but I've really seen mostly four-seamer slider thus far. And mm-hmm. I'm looking forward to seeing him become more of a four-pitch guy than like a two-pitch. Sure. But yeah, Imanaga absolutely way above the 199 ADP in Fantasy Pros, which is just no. We are not taking Imanaga after Pepio, or right where Charlie Morin and Brandon Fott are. That just to me is no.
Right.
We go for Imanaga, guys.
And that's just a really good point. In I know Nick and I have brought this up so many times, but like especially when it comes to starting pitching, make sure that you are coming into the draft knowing who you want to draft, and then actually finding them before the draft in your, in whatever software you have, and adding them to the queue or writing them down, yeah, or whatever, because so many different formats are going to have these guys ranked so differently. And you may feel like you missed a guy, or, oh, he must have been taken and I missed it because he's not anywhere, or you can't find him. And all of a sudden you're scrambling and the 1 minute clock or whatever it is ticking down and you can't find the guy you really want. It happens way more with starting pitching than it does with hitters, because starting pitching landscape differs so wildly from ADP. So if you have starting pitchers you really want to target in your draft, maybe there's some of the guys we're mentioning today, just make sure you find them before the draft starts, or if you have a lull in between your picks, and make sure you know where they are or they're in your queue so you can get to them easily when it's your turn to feel like you actually need to pick them.
I wonder if if you guys don't know, we're always just like floating around the idea that someday we'll have the pitcherless fantasy baseball platform. It'd be cool if like a draft room had a queue that you can set it by position, as opposed to just like one like column of stuff. Just like, yeah, you can add it to the mega column, but then as he does that, then it just separates them all out into individual pitch positions.
Right. I mean, you should be able, like, I know NFBC allows you to do it by round. So I can set a queue for each round. So I know, right, I have guys that I target in those rounds. I feel like it wouldn't be that much of a stretch include
just say like, cool, I want to see just the beginning before your draft starts, just like literally every one of your targets, just put them into each one. And then it's like your own little like, okay, cool, here's this and this and that. And then you're set. That would be a fun thing. So someone else that I've just been completely all in on is Brian Wu. Brian Wu is so good, guys. And I really do feel like he's a command pitcher who has one of the better four-seamers out there, as far as just it's so good at the approach angle. It comes in hard. It's going to be so difficult for guys to hit this thing. And pair that with a sinker that he does spot well, a developing slider and cutter to supplement it. Like, he has all the tools. it's the situation where you see a guy have like that 121 whip and then all of a sudden be an ace next year. Oh, Shane McClanahan, what's up? So I feel that way a lot with Brian Wu. I think that you're going to see one of these secondaries really take off this year. And he has a better skill set, I think, overall as a pitcher and being able to adapt. Like, I made this comparison before of George Kirby is to Logan Gilbert as Brian Wu is to Bryce Miller, right? And I see Wu as the command guy between the two, and he's going to likely have a much better sophomore year than last year. So I have Wu inside my top, 30? Like, he's at 26 or something ridiculous. And I've been able to get him constantly. So Brian Wu all day.
I have a lot of shares of Brian Wu as well. You know, we've talked about, like, we just talked on the last episode, so people can make sure you go back and listen to that about, you know, my thoughts on needing to see more of the cutter. But love what I love the potential of Brian Wu.
Yeah.
My next guy, we're jumping a little bit in terms of like where you're targeting these guys, because Brian Wu is inside the top 200. He's going pick 182 in NFBC online championships over the last 2 weeks. We're jumping almost 100 picks for my next guy.
How dare you?
It's DL Hall.
I know, man. How is he's so good.
He's going pick 283 on average over the last 2 weeks in NFBC online championships. I have an article coming out tomorrow on RotoWorld, which is a series I started last year that is about undrafted starting pitchers who could finish the year in the top 25.
Nice.
So this is an article that's based off a premise from The Process, which is written by Jeff Zimmerman and Tanner Bell, that basically says on average, every year, there are 45% of undrafted pitchers who end up finishing within the top 108 starting pitchers. This means for, in 12-team leagues, almost half of pitchers who finish on rosters in 12-team leagues are undrafted. And 20% of undrafted pitchers in 12-team leagues, so again, based on normal roster size in 12-team leagues, that means 20% of starting pitchers drafted outside of the top 108 will have top 25 weekly value at some point in the season. So last year, my picks for that were Kyle Bradish and Bryce Miller. Yay! It was also DL Hall, Ken Waldachuk, and Ronzi Contreras last year. So, you know, I weirdly enough hit on 20% of
picks,
something that's 20%. But I went back to the well with DL Hall this year. Obviously, now he is in Milwaukee. And so we feel pretty good about his spot in the rotation. We felt pretty good about his spot in the rotation even before Wade Miley got banged up. There's just really nobody else.
Yeah, Junis and Ross are not things. Yeah,
Junis and Ross and Ray and Ashby.
Well, I mean, Ray had 7 strikeouts in like 4 innings yesterday and looked surprisingly amazing. But he has a rotation spot, but Ashby doesn't. Right. And so DL Hall has it.
The idea being there's nobody that's going to push Hall out of the rotation.
Yeah.
Steamer has him projected for 125 innings. He threw basically 70 last year. I feel like you could maybe get 120, 130 from Hall.
But here's the thing is that's consistent through the year in relief. And I say this all the time. Going from 70 to 120, no, it's not like that because this guy pitched the entire year. And because it's in relief, we should be treating those innings more like regular starts. I don't think the Brewers are going to shut him down like at all, honestly. I think they're just going to
roll depend with him. It might depend on how competitive they are, right? If they are out of it by August, September, they might just say, because it's very clear, right? He was the centerpiece of the return for Corbin Burns. They value him in terms of his future value as well. So they won't run him into the ground if they feel like they don't need to in September.
Sure.
And I do kind of have a feeling that the team won't be competitive. But anyway, a couple things that you can read more in the article that comes out on Thursday, but just a few things I mentioned. This is a guy who throws in the mid-90s from the left side with 7 feet of extension. The extension became far more consistent after his back got healthy last year. He changed where he stood on the rubber. He started to get downhill more consistently. These are things. Also, this article features a nice embedded tweet from Nick Pollock about DL Hall's elite four-seam fastball, the 1.5 VAA, the high strike rates to right-handed hitters and left-handed hitters. So I think the fastball is a really good foundation. He changed his slider in the middle of the year. He added vertical movement while keeping the same level of sweep with his slider and also throwing it 4 miles an hour harder. It was inconsistent in terms of results, but again, you're switching a pitch in the middle of the year. It doesn't automatically click on. It grades out much better. It looks much better in the spring so far. He's actually been throwing both the sweeper and the slider that he was throwing last year in the first half of the year. And I'm interested in that because the slider he was throwing in the first half of the year last year had a really good ICR rates. So I think it just gives him a different look, especially as a lefty attacking righties. If you don't just have a sweepier slider, but you have kind of like a tighter slider, even if it's slower, I just think it gives different looks. And then the changeup has the makings of actually like a pretty decent pitch to righties. And then he also has a little bit of like a show me curveball. So you're looking at the guy who could throw five pitches, but has enough of a foundation of plus pitches that I think can really miss bats. I know the park is not great, but I'm not overly concerned about the park. And I just think like, yeah, you might get five or six innings at a time. You're not going to get like really deep games from him, but I think you're going to get really quality stuff on a team that's just going to let him go. So I love him as like post hype, whatever you want to call it this year.
Hey man, DL Hall is better than Mackenzie Gore, right? No, I'm a huge fan of DL Hall. I mean, just seeing, you know, as you're mentioning, more strikes than expected out of a guy like him. I kind of, when I initially saw him, it was bad command a bit. It was electric, but like you can't limit the walks. And really last year he showcased, no, I can get strikes with all three pitches very effectively. And the fact that it is that changeup, right, is, oh man, you have a changeup. I thought it was just fastball slider. Oh my gosh, this is great. Has that situation too with the team context where, yeah, it's pretty safe. So he's going to be out there. Some of the dings I think that you mentioned was, I don't know if he's going to be six innings. It's probably going to be more of a five and dive, I think, just based on the Brewers history. Then again, there's no Craig Counsell. He's not going to get college counseled again. Or is it camp counseled? I can't remember which one it is. Probably camp counseled because he came babied. There's a little bit of me that's like, hey, Nick, is this too much of a cherry bomb? But no, you got to take the chance every single time. I mean, this is a legitimate strikeout potential arm. I have someone actually that's very similar to this. I'm going to jump ahead before going back, and I'm going to talk about him after this break.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
It's obviously AJ Puck. Like AJ Puck, like DL Hall, is locked in into the rotation. And like DL Hall, he throws more strikes than you'd expect with a very flat arm angle and dominates with fastballs and has a great slider and has a splitter now, which is really cool. And I love it. I mean, everything I'm seeing and hearing about him and everything is just like, yeah, he's thinking very much like a starter and acting like one. And not like this reliever who doesn't know what to do as a starter. So these are guys like AJ Puck and DL Hall. I slightly have Puck higher at the moment just because I think I have more data on it, honestly. But you're going to be wrestling between the two of them. Just get both. And it's important to make the decision early. Like this is the kind of thing that you want to go and chase to see, great, is this going to be that big impact play or not? And if it isn't, if it's looking a little wonky, it's okay to let go early. They might figure it out by like May 1st or something like that. And you're just going to have to live with that if that's the case. You can also hold on if you really want to. But yeah, to your point about the process, I mean, you know, the tables I put out in October and with the list every year, these are the guys that were available after pick 260 or 275, whatever it is you want to say for your leagues. And it's constantly amazing, productive players. I was not in on the Bradish train because I didn't believe that the fastball velocity was going to do everything. I didn't know that all of a sudden he was going to just throw way more sliders and cut back on the four-seamer completely. That was a cool change that he did, and had the sinker all of a sudden negate it. Good job, Bradish. Now, please be healthy.
You did it.
But right, it's a situation where you have to embrace that. And both of those guys are past the cliff of, hey, I know I'm going to get production from the players I draft right now. Then this is the end of your drafts. And like AJ Puck is just leading the way of like, yeah, it's not even like the SP5. And SP5s are really annoying because you don't even get to see them by like Wednesday, maybe even not even Wednesday, maybe Monday thereafter, because it gets skipped the first turn or something. Mm-hmm. AJ Puck is the four right now, in my view. Actually, maybe the three because of Eric Cabrera, right? And maybe even two because of Yuri Perez. Like, what is going on?
It's a mess there.
It's an absolute mess. And we were all like, oh, there's so many spots and things are just figuring themselves out like they always do. But AJ Puck is so firmly in there. And it's actually even, I'd make the argument of like the Brewers could do something along the lines of Peralta, maybe Miley's healthy, Ray the first weekend, and really push Hall at the end of that rotation. They could even do Junis ahead of him if they wanted to, right? But the Marlins are going to make Puck go the opening weekend. And because of that, I'm so in on getting pitchers for the opening weekend if I can, because then I can make a decision before the other flyer goes. And in some leagues, like, you will be able to make your decision before your other managers, so that if both flyers fail, you mm-hmm. have a day or two up on them. You're able to get your first choice before they do, right? So early weekend pitchers are a fun thing to go after. So all those things sure. together say, hey, AJ Puck, what's up? Come on down to my team.
AJ Puck, also in my article coming.
All right, let's go.
Let's go. I'm changing up on the fly here because I was going to talk about Luis Severino because I have a lot of shares of Luis Severino. However, I had a lot of shares of Luis Severino when he was going outside of the top 300. Kind of like where Jameson Taillon was going. I just looked at the NFBC data from March 1st on. Luis Severino is going pick 241.
Okay, that's too high for you.
It's too high for me as well. I have my share.
We have like four backups at the end here, so you're going to choose.
Right. Yeah, I have my share, but I just want to talk about somebody who's actually going now only 10 picks ahead of Luis Severino, and that's Cutter Crawford.
Yeah, there you go. He was in my list of like, I got to make sure I mention Cutter Crawford because we didn't. I don't know why.
And to me, it's just like, there's a much bigger gap for me than 10 picks between these two. I understand people look at Cutter Crawford's career data and they say, you know, there's not much that suggests that he is like a legitimately good pitcher, and he's 27. So like, what is, he's not some like young prospect who's going to break out. I know people don't like Fenway Park because, you know, park factors at Fenway Park and all of that. But it's important to understand that like Cutter Crawford has been between roles for most of his career with the Red Sox as a major leaguer, right? Shuffling between the rotation and the bullpen. That's not really an easy thing for people to do, right? It's not, not everybody's going to have success jumping from role to role. So you also just have to look at the makeup of who he is as a pitcher. This is a guy with five pitches, really six, but five pitches that grade out all above average. He doesn't throw ridiculously hard. He's kind of like around 94, but his IVB, his vertical movement on his fastball is elite. Like it was above 18 inches last year. In the spring, again, we've talked about how this is like being manually calculated, but in the spring, he's been up close to like 20. So what we know is like the 18 is clearly not a fluke. We might go above 18 next year. He does live up in the zone with that fastball. And so you have a really good foundation for him where like, I don't want you to get too caught up in the velocity of the fastball, because the fastball is a good pitch. And then I just love the depth of the arsenal, because to me, as we talked about many times, that's something to suggest where like if a pitch isn't working on a particular day, he has lots of different ways that he can attack. And he has lots of different ways that he can attack both righties and lefties. The Red Sox have seemingly been like really big on cutters and getting cutters inside on hands of, you know, opposite handed hitters. So that for him, that's lefties. So he is another guy who throws that kind of cutter, but he also has a sweeper. He's got a curve. He's got a split. He's got all these pitches that he can attack in different ways. I just think that there's a really solid floor, right? This is a little bit of like, I'm not saying Cutter Crawford is Chris Bassett, but I'm saying this is what people have said about Chris Bassett for a long time, which is if you don't have overpowering stuff, but you have a deep enough arsenal that allows you to attack in different ways and get, you know, below average hard contact out of batters because of that. I mean, Cutter Crawford allowed a sub 35% ICR last year. Like, that's pretty good. And that was a real improvement from other aspects, while he also saw an increase in swinging strike rate last year. So he's missing more bats and giving up less hard contact than he has as he's settled into the rotation. I think he has the arsenal to improve on that even more. And so I know people are like, oh, his ERA of 4 or whatever was just because he was a reliever. And I don't really think that's the case. I know that the splits last year suggest he was better out of the bullpen, but I think now that he is locked into the rotation and will be a full-time starter, I think you're going to get really solid numbers out of him. And he might actually wind up being the best pitcher on the Red Sox staff fantasy-wise at the end of the season.
Yeah. I mean, I understand all of that, and I'm here for it. The depth of arsenal and the movement profiles and everything, PLV loves it. Like, good command. The improvement of the cutter last year, the emphasis on his slider more, which is great. The overall ability of his fastball is fantastic. The biggest question, of course, is, hey, are you going to be able to go 160 plus innings? Mm. He's going to get the opportunity to, and that's all I really care at this point, especially considering that he's not forcing you to take a, you know, 120th pick on him or something like that. So I'm very much in on Cutter Crawford. I love that choice. And yeah, I remember going through mine. I actually have a new one too that I'm going to throw in. Because we said we're going to do 5 each, but we're going through quickly. You know, I like this.
We're
doing it.
We're efficient.
Someone that I've realized that it was actually funny. I set up a trap for not just Justin Mason, but also Mark Northen in labor, because I had $1 left and I had to get a pitcher. And so I first threw out Lucas Giolito. Justin Mason said $2, and this was before the injury. So there you go, done. Then I said Kyle Bradish, because we had unlimited IL spots. Justin Mason, $2. Then I said, okay, fine, I'm going to get Louis Varland. But then I knew Mark Northen would take him, and he took him. So then I got my choice, Tristan McKenzie, who has just been so quietly the guy that we wanted to see this time last year before he got hurt. And he looked great I think it was 2 days ago. He's still really good, guys. His four-seamer gets as much induced vertical break as any other out there. His vert is insane on that four-seamer. It's not the best angle, but it's obviously hard to hit, has been for a while. Curveball is elite. Like, it's one of the better curveballs, believe it or not. I believe a 24% swing strike rate in 2022 on it. He just missed all of last year. That's the only reason why he's as low as he is. And actually, it's kind of interesting. He was hurt, but McKenzie came back and was dominant for a start. And then was hurt again, then came back and had 2 games that he had no control, and that was his season. So I'm thinking, hey, you are healthy now. Go get him. And what do you know? He's not getting close to drafted inside like the top 150 or anything like that. I have found myself leaning on Tristan McKenzie multiple times already. I think he's only going to get more expensive closer to draft day, but maybe not. This is what happens with ADP, is that sometimes guys just always stay low, and there's always that initial ADP that's weighing them down. And there's guys that have the initial ADP bringing them up, Yamamoto, and it's not going to, you know, something you can take advantage of. So Tristan McKenzie, sign me up.
Yeah, I'm starting, now that we were seeing him in spring, I'm starting to buy back in a little bit. I still obviously have questions about like season long durability given his build, but sure. I try not to hold that against him too much, because, you know, he's done it before, and, you know, skinny people can do things too. So why not? We're moving into the guys that Nick and I are kind of taking as, based on ADP, as deep flyers. The first one for me is Jared Jones. Over the last 2 weeks, J.R. Jones has an NFBC ADP in RotoWire Online Championships. These are 12-team leagues of 396. So that's just since March. So that's really just since it's kind of seemed like he might actually break camp with the team. I guess if you wanted to, you know, look at like when he really, when that announcement was really made, his ADP is going up, but his min ADP, so the earliest he's been drafted in these 12-team leagues, is pick 299. So you're still not looking at anything that's crazy. He's another guy. We know he has elite velocity on the fastball. He has shown much improved induced vertical break this spring. He was kind of like around 15 in the minor leagues last year. People are saying he's up to 18 in the spring. He's settled a lot around like 17. But if you're going to throw 96, 97 up in the zone with 17, you know, inches of IBB, it's going to be incredibly hard to hit. He's got a nice tight slider that I think, you know, slider, cutter, whatever, however you want to refer to it. But yeah. I think that misses bats. And so I like the depth of the arsenal a little bit. And then he had huge, huge, huge gains in his command last year in the minor leagues that appear to be carrying over in the extent that, like, this is not a flamethrower who doesn't really know where the ball is going, which was a little bit of like his profile when he was coming up as a prospect. You know, I think he gets overshadowed by Skeens, and I understand that Skeens is like generational in so many respects, but that doesn't mean that Jones is like lesser to the extent that he's not good. It's right. You know, he's still a very good pitching prospect who would easily be the number one pitching prospect on most other teams. He has more upper minors experience than Skeens, so it's not surprising to see him battling for this rotation spot. I think even if he doesn't break camp, I think it's, to me, a near certainty that he gets an opportunity before Skeens does. So yeah, it's the Pirates, and I have a little bit of a concern that, like, when they signed Eric Lauer, it was to take Jared Jones's spot in the rotation. But I think this is the type of guy you take after the top 300, because if he makes the rotation, the potential upside is elite. And if he doesn't make the rotation, then it just comes down to your tolerance for stashing him on your bench for a month or not. Because I really kind of think that's all it is. I think somebody calculated that, like, if he's up after May 15th, the Pirates get an extra year of service time, I think was what I read. So you can double check that. But what it means is, like, if he doesn't break camp, you're looking at 6 weeks before he's up, because it will just be so they could get another year out of him. And so I love taking a guy with that kind of upside this late.
Yeah. No, I'm with you there. It's just kind of a wait and see. I'm worried that they're going to make him a reliever, honestly.
No. And maybe long term, but I think
I think he
answered some of those concerns with the command improvement.
Well, okay. So a couple things. One, they haven't used him as a starter in the spring.
Yes, that's true.
That's the reason why I'm saying the reliever thing, and it's really annoying. The second thing is watching his start. Well, so I'm conflicted, because he didn't have any walks. I would not say this was a pristine command pitcher. This was a guy throwing enough in the zone and getting outs on it.
Sure.
Like, he had a 3-2 cutter.
We didn't go. Cutter.
We're not that full. Strikeout. That worked.
Joe Boyle here, though. This isn't like, throw it over the middle.
Spectrums of command. Yeah. But I would not say that he is a command pitcher. And I would I saw his sub 10% walk rates for across the last 240 innings in the minors, and thought I was going to see something a little bit more harnessed. And it's absolutely possible it's because it's the spring. And he's just going max effort, just chucking as much as he can, trying to earn the spot, overdoing things. That could very well shift once he's settled into whatever role it is. All I'm noting is that he was tugging a ton of fastballs. Everything was missing more east-west than it was north-south, which is another showcase to me of overthrowing. I don't know if he's just an effectively wild pitcher, and that's fine. Like, Tyler Glasnow to me doesn't have pristine command, but he doesn't have 10% plus walk rates, right? So there's a fine line there. So that has me a little hesitant, on top of the fact that the Pirates haven't started him yet. That said, I'm exactly with you. Yeah, you take a flyer, you see, and if not, you move on. That simple. I'm not going to stash him until May 15th, I'm not going to give up the roster spot for that long on a guy that isn't Jackson Jobe.
Sure.
Jackson Jobe is, oh my gosh, is he so good. It's really dumb. I'm not going to draft him because I'm going to wait until like June or July. But well, this is
so,
the number
they
one.
They have so many
prospect.
More. Yeah, they have
yeah,
so
he's
many
number
more
eight
options.
At best, right. If not so many nine, more options. Ty Madden there also. Right. But yeah, it's Mize at six and Sawyer Gibson-Long is seven. And with Flaherty looking good today and Maeda looking better yesterday, yeah, doesn't really look like there's any movement inside of that Tigers rotation. So whatever. But anyway, going on the same idea of just late round flyers and everything, you know, Tanner Houck is like 350 or something stupid like that on Fantasy Pros ADP right now. And obviously there is the impact of, hey, we didn't know if he was going to start. We thought that Whitlock would be there first, but he's apparently throwing harder than anyone else in Red Sox camp. That is, he has the highest jump in velocity, they were saying. That's really fun. Actually, I'm looking now. Tanner Houck is not even that. Tanner Houck is 422. Oh my gosh. He has the rotation spot, guys, for the Red Sox. And I don't quite know yet all the data. I don't know how he's attacking left-handers quite yet. Mm-hmm. However, he's been successful in the spring. And there's something to be said about clearly it's working for him in some fashion. I just want to see what that is. And the cost of free at the end of my draft for a guy who starts every day for a team that should have a decent offense behind him and obviously has a very whiffable slider and has more velocity on now as sinker. Like, I want to see it. maybe he has a good feel for his splitter all of a sudden. That's cool. And actually, I'm kind of more in than Whitlock at the moment for two reasons. Whitlock is his changeup and slider were not really there in his last start whatsoever. It could be tinkering for more of the curveball, but we just didn't really see the slider. I'm like, yo, that's the pitch though. We want that thing. And I want to give props to Lance Brzozowski. He has a newsletter on Substack, and he has some data that I don't have. And he was talking about with extension, with Whitlock going from like 7.5 on a sinker last year to just 6.3. Last year, and I didn't realize that that was such a massive change. And he's kind of saying like it's not really that back. So it's something to think about with Whitlock. And I don't know if I'm going to be quite as in. So I think I'm thinking too much of 2022 Whitlock and just saying, hey, last year was just because of injury. But is he that different? I don't know. And I want to actually make a correction. Brzozowski isn't saying that he has new extension. But he is suggesting that you know, there might be a different version of Whitlock we're seeing now because of this, which is a very interesting thought to me. So considering there's more confusion with Whitlock, I'm kind of like, I don't know. And with Houck, I'm like, yeah, this seems all right. Let's try that one. What do you feel, Eric?
Yeah, I also like the thing about Houck with the velocity that I read is that it doesn't have to do with like a driveline related added velocity. It's more just that he was pitching through a back injury last year and now he feels healthy and he feels like ready to go, and that has allowed kind of like some older velocity to come back. So to me, that's more sustainable than like, oh, somebody had a velocity jump because they were, you know, working in the offseason. And that's not to say that driveline velocity gains aren't sustainable, but this is just a pitcher returning to health. I'm getting close to putting Houck over Whitlock. I am in on both of them at cost because Whitlock is still going incredibly late in drafts as well, and he has a spot in the rotation. He's, you know, picked 331 in NFBC over in March, and Houck is 346. So they're kind of going in the same range, and I'm happy to like wait and see who falls. Also, like Jameson Taillon is going right around there. So Gavin Stone is going around there. So I wait and I see who it is. I like that Whitlock is throwing two versions of his slider right now, the sweepier one and the harder one, which even if it's not like people are calling it a cutter. And I know everybody's like, why is he throwing this cutter? It's not that great. And I just think it's important for him to have that as another offering. I don't want him to be cutter focused pitcher, but again, we've talked about the Red Sox are using cutters to get in on the hands of opposite handed batters. And I think
it's the best.
If Whitlock is sinker, sweeper, changeup, and then can have that cutter as something else, I think that is really useful for him. But it all comes down to health and location. I mean, if you look at his, you know, if you look at his zone rates, if you look at the low location, stuff like that over on Pitcher List, you just see numbers last year that were so drastically different from the numbers we saw in 2021 and 2022, which to me is health, it's feel for pitches. It's just a guy who wasn't throwing anything where he normally does. And yeah, maybe, I mean, I think he has looked pretty good this spring. I know that he has faltered as the, you know, the outings have gone on. Sometimes in the third or fourth, you know, he'll make some mistakes, but I don't, to me, I think that just happens in the spring as you're working on things. And you know, you make a bad pitch here or there. I don't think that Whitlock is like an ace, but I'm still in on both of these guys. And he was one of the guys I wanted to talk about as one of my late round flyers. So that checks the box for me. And we'll get to your next guy again, but we'll do it after this break.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
So there's someone I skipped over at the beginning that I just got to mention that doesn't get enough love. It's Yu Darvish. Guys, Yu Darvish is in, again, great situation. He's he has obviously a deep arsenal, but what I really like right now is that he's focusing on the right things inside of that arsenal more. And it's great pitching for San Diego, especially in April and May. Considering that Yu Darvish isn't going like where, say, I don't know, Framber Valdez is, Justin Steele, he's not even going up as high as like Jesus Luzardo. Like, he's really getting pushed further down. And I treat him inside my top 30. So I find myself always just hovering around, okay, is this now the time just to get Yu Darvish? Great, cool. I'll just cash that in and move on. He's going to get you strikeouts. He's not going to fall to like a 20% strikeout rate. I don't think he's going to have a 4 ERA. He's always a good whip arm. Like, go get Yu Darvish. He's really good. And also the injury that he had last year was bone spurs. That's the best injury to have for the next year because that's making him feel better than repairing a tendon or something along those lines. So it's not a soft tissue injury. It's actually just removing the things that was giving him pain and how he's good. So I'm a huge fan of Yu Darvish, and I felt like I needed to bring him up here.
Yeah, I fully agree. I mean, this is one of like the boring veteran picks that aren't like, oh, this is a young guy with the next level. But it's somebody who I think, I don't know. I it's somebody who I feel like we overlook the stability.
Yeah. It's like Chris Bassett, but with strikeouts.
Sure. yeah. I mean, like that, I guess I'm okay with that. I just, you know, somebody I like being compared to Chris Bassett is like, but
yep.
I guess it's fine. the last guy that I want to mention is Ryan Nelson. Again, this is somebody who, you know, you and I have talked about a bunch, and you and I have talked about a bunch in terms of drafts where like he's just free at the end of drafts. I mean, his ADP in these 12 team RotoWire online championships is 422. You can just wait and wait and wait and get him. He's throwing a little, he has the fifth spot for the Diamondbacks locked up. He's throwing a little bit harder so far in the spring. You're looking at like a little bit over 95, getting the fastball up in the zone. The changeup, he's been working on the changeup a lot in spring and it's getting whiffs. And so that would be really nice if he could get a little bit of extra command of that, because he's kind of like fastball, sinker, cutter. Like there's a lot of like hard variations of a fastball. So I love to see him make those adjustments on the changeup. And then what I thought was really interesting, after the last outing, they talked to the Diamondbacks manager, and he mentioned that Nelson intentionally took velocity off the slider to in that start to make it a little bit like sweepier, to make it a little bit to really kind of go for swings and misses. And they all felt really good about that change. So who knows if that's something that's going to carry over. But I like the idea that, you know, this is somebody who hasn't really been a strikeout pitcher, But the foundation of fastball variations is there. So if we are modifying the slider to be more of a swing and miss pitch, I don't think he's all of a sudden going to like explode to be like a 27% strikeout rate guy. But I just think like if he can make some small improvements in swing and miss, and if that changeup becomes something that he can trust more often too, that adds more depth to the arsenal. And so I look at him as a pick maybe more toward like 15 team leagues, even though I'm interested to see what the upside is in 12 team. But I think this is a guy with a locked in rotation spot who's probably not going to like blow up your ratios, who has a chance to be just like a really rock solid fantasy pitcher if things break right for him.
Yeah, no, I think those are all really great points. I remember freaking out about Ryan Nelson a ton in Florida because that's when he was showcasing 97 all of a sudden and, you know, having that really tight but good cutter. And I mean that as like the down and away, it looks like a fastball, and then boop, never mind, it's not there. And what's interesting is Ryan Nelson's first start is the Yankees and the second one is Atlanta. I'm like, ugh, okay. Yeah. So you can kind of be patient on this if you really want. Ryan Nelson could be the guy that if you go for someone opening weekend, you can get Ryan Nelson because he won't be available or won't be drafted in your 12 teamer. So you have that already as your flyer. So go get someone the opening weekend and then that's your backup, right? But you might want to wait just to see how things play out in the first week or two. And by the way, like Reynaldo Lopez, who's someone we are both interested in a bit, would get the White Sox if he is the SP5 for Atlanta. So monitor that one. If it is Raylo, I think I'm going to be favoring Raylo over Ryan Nelson for that reason. But the fact of the matter is, it's a locked in spot. He's not fighting anyone else. He has this, unless he's absolutely horrendous, which he won't. Ryan Nelson's going to be there every 5 days throughout the entire year. I don't really think they're going to even hold him back. So I think this is the perfect foundation for Ryan Nelson to really improve in exactly the ways that they were just talking about. There's a great quote there about utilizing a different slider at times too. It's just so interesting to see. I know that I get excited and hyped about certain players that I might not be drafting at times, and it's hard to read my hype. And I want to make it clear that Ryan Nelson's someone that no one gave any sort of notice to, who is showcasing something equivalent to being a rosterable 12 teamer. And that is a huge deal. That's so exciting for me to see something new that is then showcasing value where it wasn't expected. Does it mean that you should be taking him over, say, DL Hall? No, you should be taking DL Hall. There's a lot more to like there in his entire profile. Ryan Nelson does have a good four-seamer, though. Does great at well. And if he's able to continually take those steps, there is stuff in there that would make me excited. The other names that y'all should be aware of, and I want to emphasize this one, because I still feel like, even though I was like, yeah, this is a good pick, I actually haven't found myself doing it as much, and I need to. And it's James Paxton. You have to, like, just get James Paxton at the end of your draft. Just do it. He's going to get the Cardinals the first start. I'm totally down with that. And he's in such a good team context where James Paxton, as long as he's healthy and he's looking fine now, is going to produce for you. Just get that value as you figure out everything else. If there's something that's just so overwhelmingly great on the wire, sure, you can just straight drop James Paxton. But instead of settling for like a Toby who won't give you any strikeouts, at least get the one that has a good win chance and actually could do a strikeout in an inning. So I'm trying as much as I can to say, Nick, get James Paxton, as much as I possibly can, knowing that I'm going to be dropping him by the end of May at the latest, honestly. If not by like April 30th or something, but that's still something that we all should be focused on. I got to mention, of course, Ryan Weathers. Hi, what's up? You're throwing 97 now. Mm-hmm. And now you have even clearer of a rotation spot. Even Trevor Rogers too, who had a really good slider in his game against the Mets. We got no data because literally it's like, I feel like it's a movie where the cameras go out at exactly the right time and they know it. So we have no information about Trevor Rogers. It was only his three innings. Then they turned it back on again. It was fine. And so I just don't have any. I have it on Max Meyer. I didn't need it on Max Meyer. I needed it on Trevor Rogers. So he's someone else. I'm thinking, oh, yeah, right. He has a rotation spot now, too. Those are the SP3s and 4s now for the Marlins. We might see Max Meyer back because Ever Cabrera could be gone and Braxton Garrett isn't ready, right? So I don't know. They might go with Devin Smelter or something. I can't. There's someone else there I'm forgetting who could take over. But anyway, the point is Rodgers and Weathers should absolutely be considered too. And I'm seeing if there's anyone else. Oh, yeah, there's one last one that I've neglected because I thought it would be Casey Mize, and it's not. It's Reese Olson. Mm-hmm. Reese Olson should absolutely be considered.
Also in my article coming out on Thursday.
There it is. Yeah, Reese Olson is someone who we liked last year. We had him retired initially, then we thought that, oh, I did at least. Casey Mize is here. And they got Flaherty, and they got Mize. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no way. And here we are. And Olson should have it, and Mize is in the bullpen. So, yes.
Or on the IL. I mean,
right. They could put him in that as well. That's a good point. I don't know how it's all going to shape up there. Right. But as a heads up, as far as who the Tigers will be facing, that first start will be against the Mets for his first outing. So I'm fine with that. Matt Manning is also in the same vein. Hi, what's up, Matt mm-hmm. Manning? You're cool. Hey, there's Matt. A chance Matt Manning could steal a start against Oakland in his second start of the year. That'd be awesome. Mm-hmm. I'd love that. Yeah, Matt Manning is good too.
This is why we tell people to like wait and then stockpile the starting pitchers late. The other two that I want to mention just to wrap up, Bowden Francis, who has a rotation spot in Toronto. I'm just intrigued enough. The curveball is elite. The fastballs look much better this spring. And with the Gerrit Cole injury news that he's out for at least 1 to 2 months and is going to see a surgeon. Who knows if that's going to be longer, but you're looking at probably like June, July. It's probably between Will Warren and Luis Gil for the final rotation spot. Yeah. I know that my initial reaction was Will Warren. I do like Will Warren as a prospect, and a lot of prospect writers that I know like Will Warren. I know you believe that Luis Gil has more upside for fantasy purposes. I really do think that it's worth taking late round gambles on either one.
Sure.
Just because, you know, you're looking at probably 2 months of runway, if not more, in the Yankees rotation. And I think the team context, provided that, you know, the Judge injury news is all good in the coming days, is still probably a good one. And so, you know, why not take a gamble and see if you hit? Because depending on who you trust, either one of those guys has upside to make a difference.
Yeah, there's also Clayton Beter in there too. It's yes. possible. It's interesting because Clayton Beter is more of like the fastball slider type. Same with Luis Gil. And then Will Warren is the Clark Schmidt, Michael King vibe. And with Will Warren, for me, I mean, I could be very wrong on this. I mean, it could be like Clark Schmidt last year, right? Clark Schmidt was actually productive for you in a 12-teamer. And that could be ultimately what Will Warren is. Apparently better changeup as well. The start that we saw was not the greatest command of everything, but Luis Gil, oh my gosh, he came in after a Clayton Beter. It's 3.2 innings of 8 strikeouts and like blowing heaters past everyone, and then he also had high strike rates on both his slider and his changeup. It was kind of remarkable, over a 70% strike rate on all of his pitches, which is the problem for Luis Gil. That's a very, very good, that's like an elite four-seamer with a solid slider and now a changeup that he's hopefully figured out well. I mean, I think it was 8 for 12 strikes on it. So that seems interesting. I would, if I'm a betting man, I would say the Yankees are more inclined to go with Warren than Rush Heel. Mm-hmm. But Heel's better. So make it Heel, Yankees. We want it. But that's a really good call there to monitor that situation as well.
And that's it. The 10 pitchers we said we were going to talk about, I think, became 20 plus. But yeah, you know what?
Of course.
We did it in under an hour, which is what we promised the people. And so hopefully this is useful for everybody. I know it's a big draft weekend coming up. So hopefully good luck to everybody in their drafts. Nick, we will be together at a Tout this weekend.
Yes. I guess I'm seeing you on Friday night. We'll figure it out. I don't know. I'll see you then, too.
We will. We'll sort of for the cool kids party.
Yeah, for the cool kids party.
I am Eric Samulski, the Pelican.
I am Nick Pollock, the Lion.
And I will get my email server for that cool kids party going right now.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.